Have you ever watched a TV show, listened to a podcast, or clicked on a video on social media that left you feeling uncomfortable or upset?
Some stories can be quite complex and hard to tell because of the emotion and the trauma that's associated with these vulnerable experiences. So how can our creators tell these difficult stories ethically and authentically?
This is a tough one. There's a lot of darkness in the world, and it's a creator's job to shine a light on those dark stories sometimes.
So brace yourselves as we get set to explore the world of ethical, responsible storytelling and why it matters. Hello and welcome to First Frame, where creators come for answers, brought to you by Telus StoryHive. I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. On this season of the podcast, we're diving into practical and ethical challenges facing Canadian content creators in 2026.
With insights from emerging creators, seasoned pros, and industry insiders, it's our goal to give you clear and actionable advice you can use right now.
Canadian content creators need a podcast to call home. This is it.
Whether creators are aware of it or not, being a storyteller comes with responsibility, especially when the story you're telling isn't your own. There's a lot to consider, from consent and power dynamics to reciprocity and respectful collaboration.
On this episode, we're going to define some of those principles, and we're going to talk about how you can apply them to your stories that you're telling, especially the ones that are really complex, traumatic, and emotionally triggering.
Our goal is to give you practical tools to tell stories with honesty and integrity, to help you understand how you can make sure the right voices are being heard, and why you also need to consider the potential impact on your audience.
To guide us through this sensitive and nuanced topic, it's my pleasure to introduce Larissa Maxwell, the founder and CEO of Maxwell Consulting Group. Larissa, thank you so much for being here today and welcome to First Frame.
Thank you so much for having me.
To get the ball rolling, let's talk a bit about your background. What is an ethical storytelling consultant and how did you get into this field?
So an ethical storytelling consultant is someone that works with different types of storytellers and projects to consider some of the ethical dimensions. And my background has a few journeys to get here. I did about 20 years in social services where there was a lot of hunger and desire for people to share stories from their first person lived experiences, which is a great thing, but that wasn't always done well. And I witnessed that over and over. And so a few years ago, I pursued a PhD to start building some research around these topics so storytellers can have models and frames that have been tested and are evidence-based. In some of my consulting work, it can look like working on documentaries, sometimes on set or planning or designing what they're going to look like, everything from the interviewing to the consent and compensation processes. It's also looked like a lot of other projects supporting first-person storytellers, Indigenous communities, and others who are wanting to put narratives out that haven't been heard.
Wow. I can tell you that many of our creators are probably going to wonder how they can hire you for assistance.
There sounds like there's a lot to unpack there. So let's dig a little deeper then into today's topic and let's start with some definitions. So what exactly would you define ethical storytelling as and why do we need it?
So I will say this is evolving. So let's humbly say we're still figuring out what does it mean to be an ethical storyteller and what's the definition. But how I would define it is a practice of care in story work that really attends to how stories are gathered, how they're shared, how they're shaped. I want to move past the right and wrong when we think of ethical. It's not about right or wrong stories. It's more about that stewardship and responsibility piece. So recognizing that storytelling is really powerful, and as much as it has transformative power, it can also harm and it can dehumanize and it can mislead. And so when we look at ethical storytelling, there's a lot of reasons that we need to consider it. As we all know, in today's world, stories in some respects are becoming currency. You know, we're seeing every post and report and campaign is demanding a story, and we're measuring them by things like clicks and conversions and algorithms. And these stories are circulating endlessly. And so we see this continued hunger for stories, particularly those that are authentic, those that are grounded in journeys, things like adversity. We're seeing a lot of hunger for stories about crime, climate change. So some of the questions that I think we need to ask is, are the stories we're telling ethical, truthful and safe? Do they empower those that are featured or a part of those stories, or are they exploiting or sensationalizing? I think we can also ask, you know, who gets to tell these stories and who decides how that gets shared? I think lastly, another question I ask is, how far is too far? If we want to talk about adverse content, how far do we go in describing that in a different type of storytelling medium? How responsible are we to keep our audiences safe? So there's a lot of consideration for us to think about around the concepts of ethical storytelling.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important conversation, especially at StoryHive. Our creators are fairly new, and this is probably something that I would say not all of them are thinking about. So without naming names, can you share some examples of both ethical and unethical storytelling that our audience might be familiar with?
Yes, without naming names, I can give you a few different examples. There is a well-known series that's on one of the largest streaming platforms, and it's looking at a real-life story of a serial killer who targeted gay men. And this is a really interesting example because although it's been consumed extremely high on that streaming service, families have spoken out that not only were they not consulted, but they felt like the ways in which their family members, their deceased family members, were portrayed was inaccurate, discriminatory, and sensationalized. A few other examples, there was quite a few media features around COVID-19 of people who experienced it in the early days, those that were using or had access to a ventilator. And these were posted online in forums that had no moderation. And so these individuals who were recovering from COVID-19 were starting to receive threats online and in person. Another example that comes more from the corporate space, there's a mini documentary that's out, and it's done by a company that produces body products. And it follows the stories of young people, mostly young women, who have experienced disordered eating, suicidal ideation, and self-harm, and they're with their mothers. And it has received a lot of reaction that it went too far. And also that making a connection between body products and those stories felt really uneasy for viewers. Maybe one last example I would share is we see this quite a bit in real-time storytelling, so events, and this has been noted many times in different media features, that individuals like residential school survivors are asked to come to events, maybe their truth and reconciliation events, but the ask is framed in a way that is very specific. We want to hear your stories of trauma and abuse. And those individuals, those elders and other knowledge keepers, are not consulted on what kind of message they would like to share, what they would like to see the event look like. And so they're not invited into that collaboration. And they're asked really just to share this very singular narrative that's intended to help the audience understand, but it doesn't necessarily feel great all the time for individuals who are given that really narrow lane.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing some of those I have seen and know exactly what you're talking about.
It's interesting because although we may not have great frames for ethical storytelling, we actually have terms that are coming up in the public lexicon a lot. So people will use terms like trauma dumping or poverty pornography, or it's a train wreck I can't look away from, or that was oversharing, or it tokenized, or it was appropriation or story spinning. It is interesting. We actually do talk about this a lot in varying storytelling lanes. We don't necessarily know what to do about it, what the specific harms are, and what does it look like to grow and emerge as storytellers who really engage in kind of relational reciprocity with the communities and the stories in which we're telling.
You've mentioned harms, so maybe we could elaborate a little bit more on that. What are some of the harms that have come out of unethical storytelling?
An interesting one is time dishonesty, where someone who might be engaging and sharing a real life story that they've gone through, and that's in collaboration with another type of storyteller, right? Maybe it's a journalist, a documentarian, or someone else. And they feel like the way in which it is produced is not honest in the time journey that they actually went through. Because very often we like to see narratives that have resolution, right? A problem, an arc, and a solution. But that's not typically what real life human journeys look like. They're pretty up and down. And radial, sometimes I say they're more like a flower where there's many petals and we all almost have to think about and consider the different petals. What can happen often is we will condense something into a storyline, but the individuals who are featured, it doesn't actually feel authentic or real to them. So time dishonesty is a really interesting one. Another really interesting one is irresponsible consumption goals. So as storytellers, we can't control what an audience will do when they consume a story, how far they'll go into it, what kind of action they'll do after. We can influence it. And I think we do need to consider that really carefully. What could or what do we want our audience to do with it? And it's interesting when you jump to the end of your story and think about it being distributed. There's different types of consumption goals. You know, is it a story that's about awareness, raising awareness of an issue? Is it entertainment? Is it something that's intended to be a moral lesson? There's so many consumption goals. And I think it's really interesting for storytellers to think, what kind of story am I really telling? And what am I wanting the audience, or at least going to influence the audience to do with it? And the reason why that's really important is that it is always happening no matter what we do as storytellers. And in our research, we've uncovered many times that people have thought they're putting forward a story of adversity, that it's going to raise awareness, but it's actually caused people to engage in really irresponsible activism or other types of online behavior that actually was not their intention. And so that's something interesting to think about.
I wonder if creators truly realize the power that they have when they're sharing a story, and maybe they don't think of that. So for creators, if they aren't sure, how can creators figure out whether what they're doing is ethical or unethical? What are some of the flags?
Yes, a few things to think about. The very first one, if your story features people, you want to consider lived experience inclusion. So what I mean by that is, how involved or engaged are the individuals whose story is being told or being featured? How involved are they? Yes. And there's a bit of a spectrum we've developed. And on one end of the spectrum, it's exclusion and tokenization, right? It's sort of like just kind of using someone's story, but it's for a purpose that you define and they don't get to collaborate. And as you move down the spectrum, we can consider things like co-creation. Mm-hmm. Can we invite those whose stories we might be sharing or featuring to actually be a really active part of shaping what that could look like? And it's interesting because it does require us to decenter our power a little bit. I've worked with a lot of organizations who have looked at this and gone, what does co-creation look like? Could we support something that might actually have some lived experience led elements? Do these communities want to tell their own stories? And we could support that in a different way. So I think there's a really interesting practice there on considering what type of lived experience inclusion you're doing. And meaningful inclusion to me is really centering the needs and the desires of the people whose stories are being featured and told. That does get complex. There is some stories that are being told about people who can't tell them themselves, like those who have passed away or are deceased. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the practices. Another really interesting one is to consider trauma-informed story work and asset-based story work. So sometimes when we are telling adversity narratives, we predominantly feature and look to the experience of hardship that someone has gone through. But in most cases, their story has many different arcs in it and many different strengths. And so are we only featuring or focusing on this one dimension? What are the other dimensions of this person? And to be trauma-informed is to really consider not only that individual's voice and choice in the process, but it's to consider also for an audience, are we engaging and educating audiences, or are we potentially harming or taking folks too far into a graphic or a difficult narrative? And there's some interesting pieces that we're playing with on the research level to try to figure out how far is too far. But there is some really interesting work around trauma-informed storytelling.
So obviously, ethical storytelling should be something that our creators are thinking about at all times, from what I'm hearing. But are there any particular subject areas or topics where you think creators should be taking special care to ensure that they're doing things right?
I think in particular, narratives that are around adversity and adversity transformation journeys, I think those that have dimensions of trauma, those that have dimensions of cultural, gender, and sexual identity, I think these are ones that we need to be considering. I've also done quite a bit of work with projects that are looking at engaging children and youth and some of the different dimensions around not just the narratives, but what does consent mean and considering long-term risk and what that means for people from varying backgrounds.
Absolutely. And I think we see this a lot, and it's something that we consider as we are reviewing pitches when we're getting some of these pitches with heavy topics and stories. You know, is this the right person to tell the story? Are they approaching it in a manner that feels respectful? How is the audience going to maybe react to this type of story? Is it the right time to tell that story? Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we have creators that come forward and they want to share their own story, but are they in fact actually ready to share their story?
Absolutely. Something I would note that I've really seen there's major gaps in. So as much as I spend time kind of studying story work and building these models and working on projects, I've spent a lot of time with storytellers themselves. So those that want to share their own stories. And like you said, not only sometimes is there the processing of what they have walked through, but we actually see real gaps in just supporting storytellers to refine their messaging, to identify their motives, to consider safety concerns, to identify things like even compensation structures, how to navigate contracts, considering the impact to family and others that as we share our own stories, there's interconnections. Oftentimes, as we share our own stories, we're often sharing the stories of others. It's pretty tough to tell your life story without your guardians or your parents or your community. And so thinking through those dimensions, we just see really significant gaps in programs that specifically support storyteller development. And I'm grateful projects like StoryHive, all the StoryHive projects are coming forward and have that mentorship and support to consider, yes, the practice of story work, but the practice of storytelling as well.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, well, let's put the conversation on pause for a moment and have a little bit of fun. It's time to play 1 Minute Mentor.
Great idea, Jen. Okay, Larissa, here's the deal. We're going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and then I want you to share with our listeners the best piece of advice or mentorship that you've seen or heard about when it comes to ethical storytelling.
Some of the best mentorship I have received is actually through an author. His name is Harold R. Johnson, and he was a Cree author, Canadian lawyer, and former Crown prosecutor who has written some incredible books. And the book that I would recommend and that has had a huge impact on me is called The Power of Story: On Truth, the Trickster, and New Fictions for a New Era. This book explores storytelling and that we all are story, but we're the stories that we tell ourselves. And so one of the things he says that really sticks with me is to change our circumstances, we need to change our story. In new ages, we need to tell stories about who we are at this time in history, trying to be more complete and not leaving anyone out. I think it explores and brings up this concept that we're often doing, which is restorying. And it's had a huge impact on my life and some of the work that I do.
Great advice. And I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
Now that we set the table with some definitions and examples, let's get into concrete advice for our creators. You mentioned that you've done a lot of research into emerging best practices. Which ones are at the top of your list?
One of the ones that has emerged really strongly is an evolved form of consent that we're calling living consent. So very often in projects, we're seeing it's great, there's consent forms, but they're typically a one-time sign your life rights away. It's written in language people typically can't understand. It's a lot of legalese. And so the concept of living consent is creating a process that isn't just one time. It actually requires a storyteller to earn a yes all the way through a project. And so how it practically has looked is to, yes, still have consent forms, but to have different elements in that consent form where individuals, for example, can view different cuts of a project. They actually might be able to review and give some input. They might be able to see a final cut. What's really interesting about living consent is when people hear about it, they get really worried because they start to feel like, well, isn't this going to be a legal nightmare? Is someone going to take over? In my experience, when it's structured well, we've done now about 60 of these. We haven't had a single person revoke their consent. And in fact, it's built a deeper relationship with storytellers and has even caused those relationships to go into multi-dimensional projects in the future because the trust has established in a really unique way. And so that's one of the practices that I wanted to bring forward.
How should creators think about power dynamics when telling stories that involve people, communities, or lived experiences that aren't their own?
I mean, these are people's lives and stories, and stories are pretty precious. I think of the word sacred, which usually means to hold with great care. And depending on the type of story that you're telling, for a lot of people, it might be the only time they've told it, might be the only historical record of something they've gone through. I think for storytellers, as much as we want to move the process forward and there's deadlines and there's timelines, it's also really important that the work that we do actually uplifts and tells the stories that we think we're telling. And so building that type of relationship that has a bit of a reciprocity cycle versus just a taking cycle moves us from things like potentially what becomes almost like a story theft to an emerging type of story witnessing and development that's really beautiful and really meaningful. I've worked with a lot of individuals who've expressed a lot of regret and concern, and have actually spent a lot of money legally to try to remove themselves from projects or documentaries. And it's caused more issues on that end. And so when I look at concepts like living consent and others and how we engage relationally with stories that we're telling, I actually think that it tends to, I don't know, give our story a bit more longevity and weight to hold through the test of time.
Absolutely. And, you know, we live in sort of this world that is an attention economy.
Mm-hmm.
You look at social media and it's how many more likes. And, you know, you've talked about that docuseries about the serial killer, and it was almost sensationalized to attract more viewers, you know, and this is an economy, it rewards sort of outrage and oversharing. So how can creators stay authentic without exploiting themselves or others?
That's a great, great question. I often think a bit about the concepts of voyeurism and witnessing and what's the difference between them. And typically what becomes voyeurism is when stories of marginalized identities or hardship or trauma or even resilience are really reduced and consumed as spectacle rather than being understood more as relational truths and some of the depths that come in that. And what can happen is we strip stories of their context and their meaning, and they become more like commodities. And yeah. I think it's really interesting when we consider what does a story require of us versus just what do we take from it. And so as storytellers, how are we building and engaging and communicating with our audience? And there's a lot of models from different communities, including Indigenous communities, that talk about witnessing, that when we actually consume stories, it means that we start to experience some level of responsibility. It doesn't mean responsibility to address an issue, fix government policy. I don't mean that level, but responsibility in how we consume it. And so I have definitely seen in some of the research that we're doing, there's this thought that the more shocking, the more graphic, the more you're going to have engagement. But we really have to think about what that engagement is. So for a lot of people that I've talked to who have consumed these types of stories, some have said that it's actually caused them to recoil in shock or horror, or to actually numb them to an issue versus engage them in an issue. Some have even said that content that is really graphic, especially sexualized content, has actually evoked eroticization. So I think we really need to think about that. Are we encouraging voyeuristic consumption of these stories? Are we actually engaging people as witnesses to this work? And I actually believe we need more and better stories. I don't want ethical storytelling to become a heavy where we say, okay, now we can't tell certain stories. I think it's actually a practice of care, of really thinking, how do we tell this story well? What are some of the practices that we need to be considering before we tell it, during, and afterwards?
So I can imagine when our creators are working on creating these stories, and like you said, their probably intent is not to sensationalize it, but let's say they actually finish the project and then they find out that, you know, something wasn't necessarily ethical. What would accountability look like for them? Like, what could they do?
What a great question. I think there's different dimensions of accountability. I think for me, I would actually lean towards not total removal of the story and wipe it clean. I think all of us, even though we're all telling stories all the time, I've even looked, there's not that many organizations or institutions that are teaching the practices of storytelling. So I think we're all learning. And so what I think would be really valuable if somebody makes a misstep is to communicate that. I'm going to give you an example of it. There was actually a project I was a part of. It's a large research project, but it's participatory action, meaning it's developed with the population that are being researched versus on them. And so as we were building this project, we referenced a model that we didn't look into too deeply, but we referenced it as example, which is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It was later pointed out to us by Indigenous communities that there has likely been a theft of Indigenous knowledge in that model. And so using it in this project was a concern. And so instead of just removing it, we had the report. We could have just wiped it and moved on. We actually kept it in and then built out a whole section about what we learned, what was held accountable, how that changes the project, and what we're taking forward from it. So I actually would recommend where we can to learn through and to, sometimes that means putting out an apology. Sometimes that means communicating what we've learned and how we're growing. Sometimes it means a content notice at the beginning. Sometimes people call it a trigger warning, but I like the term content notice. It's a content notice at the beginning of maybe a project or a film or something like that. The other piece I would say is if there are individuals that are featured in story work and they no longer want to be, we do need to consider and really think about that. I have been a part of a few projects where we have done story removal from the level of government level storytelling to TV, to documentaries, to corporate campaigns. And I do think we need to consider that as well. But I would encourage us to consider how we can be more transparent and learn through these processes. Because as we communicate that, it actually helps others learn as well. And it shows that we are engaging as ethical storytellers. I don't think there's a destination where now you're an ethical storyteller. I've faced tons of different types of stories, even as someone who studies this, and I'll sit there and go, huh, this is really interesting. I haven't seen a practice on this. We're going to need to develop something. We're going to need to test it. And we might need to learn through that.
And as they say, life is a learning journey. So, you know, whether you're a brand new creator or whether you're a filmmaker with, you know, 25 years under your belt, there's always an opportunity to learn and become better at your craft. We have, in fact, had projects that they have been completed and they have been distributed on our Optik TV platform. And a creator has come back and asked us to remove a project or edit a project because there's been an impact to either the individual who story that was shared or a family member or someone that is connected to that individual that then had a concern with the story. And, you know, I think it's in those instances, it's just another learning opportunity for those particular creators as well.
I agree. I think there's space sometimes to retire stories. Mm-hmm. You know, we've learned today from Harold R. Johnson that sometimes we need to tell new stories for a new era. There is a great example of a TV show that was a really famous comedy, and it was developed by a woman and had so many great dimensions in it. And yet there was this episode, it was from a few years ago, that the characters engaged in blackface. And instead of just removing it and wiping it, because we know that we should not be telling those types of stories, they actually put out a statement and said, we are retiring this episode permanently, but here's why, and here's what we have learned through it, and here's a commitment and how we're engaging going forward to really consider the impact of our story work. I just think that's a great example of not only showing that humility, but it actually caused me and many others to learn from it, which I think is the practice of ethical storytelling.
Absolutely. So to sum things up, for creators who are wondering, why do I need to do this ethically when other people are taking shortcuts? What would you say to them?
I would say, consider the impact of your work, and that storytelling is an incredible privilege, but we do need to steward that privilege. I also deeply believe and have seen that stories that have ethical considerations and dimensions baked into the background and sometimes the foreground, they're great stories. I really want us to think as storytellers that what we put out has significant influence, and ethical stories could be the new storytelling trend of what actually creates engaging content that we want to see. And I think we don't fully know that yet, because we are using so many of these different types of tactics in the background. There's also so many storytellers that are moving forward in these practices. And so I would really encourage storytellers to think, how could this actually help you tell better stories and build a legacy of stories both that you can be proud of, and also those that are featured in those stories can be proud of?
Yes, 100%. And, you know, think about, what kind of storyteller do you actually want to be?
Absolutely.
Larissa, this has been a really tricky topic, but you've really helped us navigate it with empathy. Before we say goodbye, are there any resources, though, that you can share with our listeners and viewers who really want to learn more about ethical storytelling?
We are in the process of developing something called the Ethical Storytelling Collective. This is a group of storytellers across the world. And when I say it's a collective, we're moving a bit slowly, because when you have a group of people, it takes time to consider, what do we want this to be? But we're building a future space for storytellers to deepen their practice through things like research, lived experience, coaching, training, accreditation. And we even want to build a living lab for different types of storytelling models that we can test out ethical dimensions. And all of it's in service to people and planet and possibility. So we're in the early stages, but I would encourage folks to follow us on Instagram at Ethical Storytelling Collective and consider joining and becoming part of the community. We are excited for what it's going to look like in the next few years.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that recommendation. And thank you also for spending time with us today here on First Frame.
Thanks for having me.
I got to say, that was another really great conversation, Jen. And I feel like we've just scratched the surface of it. So there's so much more there. And I think what really stood out for me is the fact that this is continuing to evolve, ethical storytelling. She made that quite clear. And when our creators are out there creating content, I think that they should be thinking about ethical storytelling and the importance of it. And if they do make a mistake or they misrepresent something in their story, not to worry and stress that much over it, like just take accountability for it.
Absolutely. The one that hit me was, if you're sharing stories of other people, is to make sure that those people are included. Make sure that instead of just jumping in and telling the story the way you want to tell it so that you're getting lots of views on it or whatnot, make sure that you're doing it while you're involving that individual. Make sure that you're considering the impact to not only that person, the people who are involved with that individual, and the impact that you're also going to have on the audience. I think that was a really key piece that perhaps not everyone thinks about when they have a story they want to share. That's it for this episode of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. Thanks so much to you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us.
Please hit follow so you don't miss a single thing. And if you'd like to learn more about how Tell a Story Hive can help you along your content creation journey, check out storyhive.com.
Until next time, I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. That's a wrap.